And I'm going to turn off the paint. All right. Oh, we had someone who just joined the conference, and your phone number is 253-472-7202. What's your name?
Carolyn Marriott.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay. We're starting right now. So if you have mutes on your phone, I'm sorry. I couldn't find the way to mute yourself. If you have a mute on your phone and your children start getting up or it starts getting noisy in your area, if you could do that, that would be wonderful. And I think there is a way in the conference call to do that. Does anyone know how you mute? I don't remember. Okay. Anyway, Angela and I have been preparing for this call, and we're excited to spend a little time with you guys. Unlike the other mentors, we get to have one private call with you guys a year, and so this is kind of fun. Thanks for getting on and taking advantage of the call. Some of you know Angela. I think most of you know Angela. Yeah, I think all of you know Angela because I think she did all the trainings last year.
I did all the trainings last year, yeah.
And one of the things, one of the reasons that I like to have Angela on here is because, as we do this call, is because, not only because she's a great Shakespeare mentor, but because when she started out, she was like many of you. She hadn't had any theatrical experience in high school or college or professionally or anything else. So she was a mom who had helped out backstage, like at our little homeschool plays that we did. Actually, they weren't that little. They were pretty involved. But, you know, but she was a mom who would come and help out but hadn't really done, you know, hadn't produced a show or directed a show or even thought about doing those kinds of things. And so I like, I'm glad that she's on the call with us this morning because she will bring that experience with her. And by now, I hope that you've chosen your show and you're in the process of either cutting it or you've gotten a cut version and you've found a producer and you've found a place to do your show and you've gotten some of those basics all taken care of so you can begin so that you're concentrating on actors training and you're starting to get ready for the rest of the play and the other things that you have to do. The more that you can do your prep work before you get into rehearsal, the less stressful things are going to be. There are some things that you're just not going to be able to take care of before then, but there are many things that you can begin to organize for. And I know that as Tiffany and Nellie have been talking about, you know, checklists and getting ready and preparing and doing those things, I've been reading the same book that Tiffany was reading, the Checklist Manifesto, and the thing that I have seen is that when you can take care of, you know, when you get the things that are kind of basic out of the way and you see what you have to do and you get those done, then when emergencies arise, you are more able to handle them and take care of them because, you know, you have the other things taken care of. Okay. So, Angela, I'm going to why don't you start talking to us about the prep work that both the producer and the director, probably more the director, but it's really helpful for the producer to do this as well, about studying the play and why that's important.
Okay. I think this is one thing that a lot of people skip, and I think it's it makes a huge difference in your play if you study it. A lot of people cut their own scripts, and when you do that, you know that you really understand the play. You go through every line to see if you want to cut it or you want to keep it and what is it really saying and, you know, is it relevant, all those things, and you really get to know the play. If you are a first year or if you have a really good already cut version and you're not going to end up doing that, you still need to go through the play with a paper and a pencil and write down all those details and all of your impressions about the play so that when you go to, you know, direct and produce the play, you know what it's about. You know all the details. Like, I'm doing Twelfth Night, and I have a character, and several times in the text, it tells about this character's straight yellow hair, like it's like straw. Well, I'm casting a Mexican kid for this part. So when I cut it, I'm going to have to cut all those, either get him a yellow wig, which I decided not to do because his eyebrows are so big, but I'm going to cut all the yellow straw parts out about his hair. Or, you know, or another player has boots or whatever, but it's also about what is my vision for the play. I really need to know that. And so I have to go through and really decide all of those details. It's really important for your kids to know, too, because they're playing these characters. And one special thing about Shakespeare that is not the same for modern plays is that he includes in the text all of this information about what it's supposed to look like on stage and what the characters look like and what they say and what their backstory is. All that stuff, a lot of it is in the text. So to study the text, you get a lot of understanding about who the character really is, what they know, what their background is. And as the kids go through the play, they start to put a lot of that together. They start, and when you discuss it in class, they start to really identify with certain characters. They see what the flaws are and what their, you know, the good things are. So we suggest you divide the play into five pieces, and for 5 weeks, once a week, you do your play discussion during your actor's training. If you don't have 5 weeks left, you can divide it into three pieces or whatever you need to do, but make sure the kids study it. Make sure you study it, because the difference is you might be able to squeak by without it, but it's going to make a big difference in what the kids get out of the play, what you get out of the play, and the least important but probably the most, you know, the most motivating is that it's going to make a big difference in the way the play looks.
Yes. One of the things that I love that you said is that the director really needs to know, really needs to understand this, to understand what their vision for the play is. And so just like when we talk to the students, well, of course, not the practice scholar students as much, but if you were on your Commonwealth School or your community conference calls on the writing workshop, you know, you want to make sure that you have something to say. You want to make sure there's a thesis and it's clearly defined, and you want the people leaving the theater with the big thing when you're talking about papers and transformational writing is what you want your audience to know, what you want them to feel, and what you want them to do. And when you're doing a play, you kind of want your audience, you want to have something in mind in that very same way. What are you trying to communicate with this play? What are we trying to say about society or, you know, what's going on? I think in plays it's not as obvious. In some plays it's more obvious than others about what the director is trying to communicate. But certainly you want to have a vision of what you're trying to say and what you think this play is about and what you're doing. You know, when I direct Taming of the Shrew, one of the things that last time I did it, both times I did it, but, you know, it's always a little bit different, I wanted people to realize that women are powerful and strong, and there is a place for women in society that's very unique and special. And so that was one of my underlying themes. Do I know if the audience left with that? It's hard. And when you're writing, when you're directing a play, it's a little different than when you're writing a paper, because when you're writing a paper, you really have control of all the, of everything, as you're writing. When you're doing a play, you don't have control because you're not saying all the lines and you're not doing the costuming individually and you're not doing everything. It's a group project. So as a director, you want to be able to find a way to communicate your vision and all of that. The reason I think it's good for the producer to study the play and understand that is that although it can be true with some of the producers in professional theater and in movies and things, you want to understand the play because you are the director's support. You are each other's support, and there are things that you can see. And if you understand the play just as well as she does, then or he does, you can really support them when you see things that need to be emphasized, or if they're getting, sometimes you get stuck on scenes and don't know how to do it. So I think
Sarah,
this is one of those really fundamental things that's important, so that if you've got this done ahead of time, then when you're in production, you don't have to worry so much about whether or not you understand what's going on.
We had one mentor who emailed Sherry and I, who was doing Twelfth Night, and that's the play I'm doing, and it has a drunk in it who's one of the clowns, so he's very funny, but he's mean and awful, but he's portrayed as very funny, and so she was worried about how her kids would take this, how the families would take this. But if you research the play and you decide on your vision, you can decide how to portray him, because in different versions, you can portray him as dark and not a very attractive person, an unattractive person that you wouldn't want to be and you wouldn't want to be friends with, and that's what maybe part of your vision is that this kind of life gives you his drunkenness is not the only problem. It's his meanness, so you can decide that ahead of time, and as you're directing, you can bring that out, and all those little things that you want to say through, what we're doing. If you understand the play, both the director and the producer, you lean on each other, then you can do that. I also want to say really quick, you need to get the script printed before, you study the play, you cut the script, or you get a really good version and you tweak it so that it has all the parts for your kids in it or whatever, and then you want to get the play printed out and given to them before you start any kind of rehearsals or anything. And it's really good to include in there the list of who's in what scene, act one, scene one, has these three people in it, act one, scene two has these four people, and the dates of what you're going to practice what acts, and a cast list. Those are the three things that I try to add to my script, so that everybody has information. They don't say, I didn't know I was supposed to be there. You say, well, it's in your script. You're supposed to be there. So, do you have anything else on that, Sherry?
No. No, I'm sorry. Let's move on to auditions. There are all different ways to do auditions, and this is really up to you. Some people tell their kids that they have to have something memorized and come to prepare it. Some people, say prepare your favorite, just prepare your favorite character. and come and do something from him, you know, from he or she in the play. Some people do a combination. The way that I've run our auditions is that I make sure that I have the kids tell me a week or two ahead of time. The roles that they're interested in playing, which doesn't in any way promise them that they're going to get one of those, but at least I know who they're interested in playing. You can do a combination, and what I do is I have a bunch of scenes from the play, and I have them all printed out, and then when I look and see the characters they want to play for, I just set things up and have them read for different characters. So I tell my kids to come and know the play. We've read the play, we've discussed the play, and they need to really read the characters that they're interested in playing and read some of those major scenes so that they they're familiar with them, and then I will give them a chance to audition for the ones that they're interested in auditioning for. So everyone has a chance to audition for the character that they want to audition for. I think especially in Shakespeare, it's important to do that for them, whether you even think they have a chance of getting the lead or not, because sometimes you really see things that you were not expecting that will come out in auditions. And,
all the time. Don't you think every time you see something?
Oh, well, yeah, I shouldn't say sometimes. Every time you see things that, that we're doing. So, and the thing about casting is that I think we may have talked about this at training, but one of the things that we said over and over is that we're building statesmen and women. And so when you're casting, I always pray and meditate, not just what's going to make the absolute best play, and you do want a good play, but who needs what role for their education? What is going to be the thing that's going to stretch them and move them the most? You want to make sure that you're not putting somebody in a role that they have no way of doing, because that's not empowering either. But sometimes as you pray and meditate about things, you can see that this is exactly the challenge that this kid needs. And if it's going to be a big challenge, if you have seen them working really hard in class, and you know that they are excited about it, then I think it's a good idea to give someone a challenge and something to bite off. Sometimes that's what these kids need. So be prayerful in that and challenge them and challenge yourself.
I think the key there is knowing their limitations and their talents, and combining that with following your say go-be-dos. If you know somebody's really got a gift for comedy, and they try out and they're really good at the clown part, you may decide I'm going to give this to them so they can show the world what they've got. But you may feel like, well, this is, they need to know their they need the leading lady part instead, or whatever. But if you those three things, if you know their limitations, you know their strengths, and you follow your say go-be-dos, it'll come out really good.
Great, Angela. Why don't you talk to us about the parent meeting?
Okay, right before. Right when you're reading the play in class and you're finishing up your actor's training, you're going to get ready to have a parent meeting. You're going to send out emails. On the emails, you're going to ask for volunteers, because there's a couple of things you want to have done before your parent meeting. The people you're going to, when you post for your volunteers, the people you want to fill, the roles you want to fill, you want to make sure you have a director and a producer, and you probably already have those by now, but if you don't, ask. You're going to need a stage manager, which is somebody who handles all the backstage stuff and who needs to be there at Tech Week and who they put in a lot of time, and they're really important. It makes a big difference in how smooth things go backstage. You want to ask for people who want to work on sets, who want to work on props, who want to work on lights, who want to work on music, who will do costumes, somebody who will oversee costumes is what you really need. You need the person who oversees costumes before you have your parent meeting. So get that before your
meeting.
Way
before you have the parent meeting. Because really, we recommend that you have your costumer and your producer as soon as possible, you know, by the end of the fall semester, so that the costumer can be working, and we'll talk more about what she does, but so that they can they have the costumes all ready for your parent meeting, and, you know, once the casting is done and everyone can get going on the costumes, because, of course, that's one of the things that's going to take the most time.
Yeah, so costumer is super important. That one you've got to have as soon as you can. You want to ask for help with hair and makeup. You want to ask for help with publicity, you know, printing out flyers, or we've had people put them in the paper or whatever. People who are willing to do tickets, that means, you know, set up the little booth with the tickets and taking the money and all that. Programs, a casting party, because you do not want your director to be worried about the cast party. That, you know, neither producer nor director is going to be able to pull off a cast party unless you're just going to meet at a restaurant. You know, that it's just not going to work. So you want to ask for all of those things in an email. And then when you get together, right after you have your cast party, right after you cast the kids in their parts, you have your scheduled parent meeting. And when you come, one thing you want to do is you want to make sure all those positions are filled. You want to tell the parents what to expect. And you're going to have your costumer talk to the parents about the costume plot, hand out lists of who needs to get what the shoppers need to get and what the sewers need to do, and what each kid needs to come prepared with. You can go over your calendar at the time. You can go over the rules for your rehearsals. You can go over, you know, like your rules for your rehearsals, like everybody needs to be at every rehearsal unless somebody's, you know, sick or dying, you know, something like that. So that's your parent meeting it really gets everybody ready for the play. It gets everything, and everybody's in the mode. They're in play mode at that moment, and they know what costumes they have to come up with, and they know, you know, they have to be on time, and they know that they're going to end up making a costume here and bringing a snack on this day and all that stuff. So that meeting's really important. Do you have anything else at the meeting, Sherry?
If you don't already have your parent meeting scheduled, I would get that scheduled very soon and start sending emails out along with, I mean, I think we told you, you know, should be if you haven't sent the dates out in a while for the rehearsals, you should send those out now so that you don't have to know what scene you're doing when. You just need to give everybody the dates, the days and times that you're rehearsing, so that everybody knows, and let people know when the parent meeting is, and tell them, please put this on your calendar. Don't be embarrassed that you send it out with, like, if you send it out every other week. You need, because trust me, people will come to you and say, well, you know, we didn't have this on our calendar, and so you don't want to be caught with saying not having sent the stuff out, and that's why we tell you send it out in August.
Sorry, Sherry.
No, that's okay. So so that they don't have an excuse for not being there. What were you going to say, Angela?
Some commonwealths do not, they say the parent meeting is mandatory if your kid is going to be in the play. So that's how important the parent meeting is. And you may decide to do that if you have parents that you know they have to have a have to, or otherwise they won't come. That is one thing. They really need to come to this. So you can say you have to come, otherwise your kid can't be in the play. And, you know, you can decide to enforce that or not, but it's that important that the parents are on board.
If you do that, make sure you tell the kids. Because the kids want to be in the play, and so they'll get their parents there.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, great. Okay, Angela, why don't you talk about the producer?
Okay, the producer... The producer, it's so important to have a producer. It's really hard to produce a play as the director. I don't know if it's really possible to do a great job at producing a play if you're a director, because you're so wrapped up in the kids and what's happening on stage, and all the little details, you know, need to happen. A producer works very closely with the director. They are in charge of over all those people that I told you in the parent meeting you want to ask for volunteers for. The producer oversees those people. They make sure that the props people have, you know, are taken care of, that they have a list of props to ask for the parents for to find. They make sure the sets are going to be done on a certain day. They make sure that we have a lighting person, and they're going to come all through Tech Week. They make sure the hair and makeup people are ready. They make sure that there's snacks at Tech Week, that there's parents signed up to bring snacks so the kids don't, you know, lose all their energy. And so they really, what the producer does is she works very closely with the director. She writes down all the things that the director needs, and she makes those happen. And she doesn't do it by herself. She has that committee of all those different parents in charge of different things, but she makes sure that the details are worked out. It's her job also to make sure that the theater is taken care of, that you have a theater and you have it booked for the right dates. You have practice time during Tech Week so that you can show up and the kids can practice on the stage that they were going to, you know, do their show. She makes sure that whatever you're doing for finances is going to happen. Like if you're going to have a fundraiser, or if you're going to sell tickets, or, you know, if the costume director needs a budget, she takes care of all those little details, and she's really somebody who the director can lean on, and it's really good to get a very organized person to be the producer. I would say I'm a maybe very mediocre producer myself, because I'm not super organized, but if you can get a really organized person, you are so lucky. So that's really awesome if you can get an organized person to do this.
Absolutely. And that's going to take us right into the director. the relationship between the director and the producer is really important, especially if you're both mentors in the play, because your kids are going to see you working together, and it will... you will teach them a lot just by their observation and your example. Okay, the director. Here are the important things for the director to know. First of all, I'm just going to go back and say you need to study the play. You need to watch it, watch different versions, read it, listen to it. When I'm directing a play, I usually have a copy of it in my, you know, on a CD. And what's that called? Archangel?
Yeah, that's it.
Archangel is, I mean, there are a lot of different people who do plays on CD, but Archangel is, they are really good. They're dramatized, and you just listen to it. But if you're familiar with a play, and then you just listen to it over and over and over again, you begin to hear the nuances, you know, and you begin to hear things that you didn't hear before. And so I just always am immersing myself in the play as much as possible. And then probably one of the most important things that you do is when you go to rehearsal as the director, you make sure you have that scene blocked before you go to rehearsal. So just like when you were at training and you did your little scenes, we told the directors to make sure they had their blocking. So the blocking the scene is telling the actors where you want them to enter, exit, what you want them to do on stage, how you want them to deliver lines, if you feel really passionate about that. And sometimes I tell them right away, sometimes I let them try and figure things out, you know. There are several different kinds of rehearsals. You have a blocking rehearsal, which generally the first time you go through a scene, it depends on how big the scene is. It may just be a blocking rehearsal. A blocking rehearsal is where everybody has a pencil in their hand, and you make sure you tell the kids to bring pencils because you want them to write down their blocking. And you'll have the blocking in your script. And bring a parcel of pencils so that they don't have any excuses for why they didn't remember their blocking. I always kind of make a game of this, and what I do is I'll tell someone, okay, Hortensio, I want you to come out stage left. I want you to be, you're exhausted. You can't hardly walk. You're going to walk over to this rock. You're going to sit yourself down, and then you're going to say your line. And it depends on, you know, sometimes you see things really vividly and sometimes you don't get quite all that intensity, but you'll get that eventually and be able to deliver that. So so make sure you write everything down. And when I'm blocking a scene, sometimes I get ideas, you know, as I'm watching it or listening to it. I try to write those ideas down when they come to me because I can never remember them later when I want them. And I'll pull out my notes sometimes. And then what I do is I read the lines and I close my eyes or I just envision it in my head. Where do I think the actor should come out? What do I want the scene to look like? And as I envision that, I write it all down. Now, sometimes I go over it and go, no, that's not right. I have to do it this way. Or, you know, you change things. But the more you've worked on the scene and you really know that scene, all the prep work that you do ahead of time is going to save you minutes and minutes, lots of time at rehearsal. You're not going to be wasting time. If you show up at rehearsal and you haven't done your blocking, you will just be wasting tons and tons of time. And you don't have a lot of time. Even if you rehearse
you don't
three
look
times
good.
A week. Pardon me?
The kids have to know that you prepared. You're asking so much from them, you know, and that you don't want them to think that you just showed up. You want them to see that you prepared. You prepared as much or more than them. You made sure to think about this and to make plans for them because they've been working hard. Don't you think, Sherry?
Absolutely. Everybody works hard. And if you aren't showing up prepared for rehearsals, your kids aren't going to show up for rehearsal prepared either. Some of your kids may not show up for rehearsal prepared anyway. But
right. If
you're showing up for prepared for rehearsals, then you have two legs to stand on firmly and say, you know, when you need to inspire them to work harder and say, hey, I'm not just coming and saying, okay, you guys figure it out, how you want to, you know, be on the stage. And you know, now, when you go through all this time and to figure all this out, you and you then you actually do it. I have like known that this was it, and this was a really good scene, and I go and I do it, and it's completely ugly, and you have to change it, and it's awful. However, because you've worked on it and you understand the scene, even if what you've done doesn't quite work, you have something that you can build on top of. And it's way easier to fix something that doesn't work than to try to create something on the spot. Creation takes a lot of energy, and it's hard work. So not so hard that you can't do it, though. That is probably the most important thing. You have to find a way to work with the actors that is so that they know that as a director you're in charge and you know what you're doing, and yet you're not screaming at them because they're not paying attention and doing what you want them to do. They are not always going to pay attention and do what you want. They are going to have side conversations. They are going to show up and not have their lines memorized. All kinds of things are going to happen. You have to love them through the process. There's a time and a place to get, you know, you can show disapproval from time to time. You certainly aren't going to put up with inappropriate behavior and things that are messing up rehearsals. I certainly have been known to raise my voice at rehearsals when people aren't pulling their load and aren't doing what they need to, or they're being so loud when they're not on stage we can't even think or hear each other, you know. But if you're always yelling at them, they'll stop listening. So you have to reserve that for the times when, you know, you really need it. And I'm not suggesting that you have to get mad at your kids, but if you, you know, especially if you have other kids in the show who are trying to work hard, and it depends on, you know, if you can get them to tell people to be quiet and to take some leadership responsibilities. If you have some of your leaders in the class who are some of the most disruptive, which happens, you know, has happened to me, I sit down and have conversations with them and say, listen, everyone's going to follow your lead. Whether or not you want to be a leader in the class, you are, and people follow you. I really need you to be one of the ones who's making sure that you're staying on track and that you're paying attention and not pulling everybody off, because we're not going to make it through rehearsal if I don't have your support. So, you know, and you have a conversation with them and work things out. But you got to love your kids into doing what you want them to do. Sometimes you give them direction so that everybody can hear it. Sometimes I'll take an actor and pull them aside and talk to them about something I want them to do. It just depends on the student, on their personality, and on how you think you're going to inspire them and motivate them the best. But as you pray and meditate about what's needed in your rehearsal, I think that you will find that it will come. Sometimes the kids will say, you'll give them a blocking and they'll say, hey, could I do this instead? I always love to see what the kids want to do, and I would always see what they want. And sometimes they come up with amazing things that I never thought of. And sometimes they come up with stuff and it doesn't work. And I'll try it, and we'll see, and then I'll say, you know, I don't think that's going to work. I think let's go back and try it this way. But let them try. And sometimes you take some of their advice, and sometimes you don't. And so then they begin to see that this is really a give and take between all of you, because it really is. It's everybody's creativity together.
Good morning.
Okay. The next thing I want to talk about is the stage manager and the stage crew. The stage manager is your backstage important person. When you're doing Shakespeare and you have all these kids, you may want to have people, parents backstage as well. You generally want a stage manager, one on each side of the stage. And your stage manager, this is very important. Whoever is the stage manager, once you get to Tech Week, they have to be at every rehearsal. They can't tell you, oh, I can only be there for three of the four days. No, they have to be at every rehearsal. The tech crew and the stage manager. So you have a stage manager and an assistant stage manager. Sometimes in our shows, because our Commonwealth has been going for so long, sometimes our stage managers will actually be the advanced kids who aren't doing Shakespeare, but they've had a lot of experience and they're good back there. That can be, if you have the students who you don't have to worry about them getting off track, that can be a very motivating thing for your Commonwealth or your co-op, because then here you have these older kids who are mentoring the young kids, and these older kids who are saying, hey, come on, you got to be quiet. You know, where are you guys? Are you kidding? Get on, you're on stage right now. You know, that's so much more empowering than having the students, than having the parents do it. But you may not have that, so you may be using parents, and that's okay. You can have an assistant stage manager who is perhaps a student in your class who has a smaller role, and they could be the assistant stage manager. So they're kind of running things on the other side of the stage and, you know, making sure all the props are there, and that's a good thing too.
They're going to be so tired.
So, stage manager is in charge of the stage crew. The stage crew can be, it can really be almost anyone. It can. So I try to use the kids in the cast as much as possible, especially kids with smaller roles. But it may be that you need one other person who's not in the cast because, you know, for whatever reason. Sometimes we've used younger siblings. My son John started being involved with Shakespeare plays probably when he was 8 or 9. He was a really responsible kid, and so he could start doing that. He was always on the stage crew. There's all kinds of things.
You know, Sherry?
Yeah.
John is so, so mature. We never have used kids under 11. We personally use kids who are coming in the next year to give them a little bit of taste of what they're going to get the next year. But, I mean, John was awesome. But I think most of the time I wouldn't use super young kids.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. And
but
I was
you
always
can also
there.
Use people who
just
are going to come in the next year who want to be part of your Commonwealth. This can be a nice little intro for them.
Yeah, that's very true. It's a great little way to do that. So. But everybody has to be there for everything. And so when you're clearing the time, you say you have to be there for everything. And if you can't be there, then I'm sorry, I can't use you. Okay, Angela Setz.
Okay. You know, I just want to say one more thing with the stage manager.
Okay,
go ahead. The stage manager does two things that, you know, I was stage manager 1 year before I got to be a mentor, and it was an awesome experience. And so it would be a really good thing for parents if you have somebody who, you know, you're hoping that will go to training next year. But they take direction from the director. So the director tells them exactly what they need, and they listen to the director, and then the crew listens to the stage manager. That's how that, you know,
yes.
That's the designated line of authority or whatever for the stage people, is the stage manager gets all this direction from the director, and then she makes it happen with the stage crew. And then at the end of those rehearsals, when the director gives notes, the stage manager also will take a minute and give a couple notes, like saying, we need people that are not, you know, we need to have people out of the aisles when we take this off, or we need to have quieter backstage, or we need to have this actress take off the needlepoint or whatever. She gives her stage directions at the same time as the director gives notes. The director usually gives the stage manager a minute for her notes as well.
Absolutely. And again, once you get, we like to have our stage managers come to, like, the last two Fridays when you're doing run-throughs, if your stage manager is not someone who's involved in your class, I like to have the stage managers come to the last couple run-throughs, or maybe at least the last run-through before you go into Tech Week, so they can see the show all the way through. And in fact, as we're doing our little rehearsal, I'll have the stage manager say, okay, scene change, and here's what we're going to do. That's a really important thing. So anything else on that?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So sets, let's talk about sets.
Sets are sets can be such a big help in a play, but they can also be such a big deterrent in being able to enjoy the play. So we like to follow Shakespeare's lead and say simple, simple, simple sets, because there's one thing that'll kill your play after you've spent, you know, your 6 or 7 or 8 weeks or whatever you've spent with the kids and perfected this play. One thing that'll kill it is for the audience to have to sit through long scene changes. They lose interest. You know, we're used to TV, you know, where things just change. The scene changes in an instant. And so you don't want to have these huge sets that you have to change and that takes a lot of time. It also makes your performance a lot longer. And they don't really give they don't give as much as they take away. So, plus, you don't want to drain your parents and your Commonwealth of money and time and effort on something that's not going to, you know, make it better. So simple sets, there's a couple of really easy ways to do this. One is a lot of theaters and churches and places that you'll perform will have just plain curtains, like black curtains or dark curtains in the background. And a lot of times players will just bring on like something to insinuate where they are. Like maybe for the garden, they'll bring out, you know, the garden furniture and a couple of topiaries or a couple of ficus, you know, plastic ficus trees or whatever. So they bring out just a few things to show where they're at or to sit on and those kind of things that they need. If it's like we're doing 12th night, so we need a beach, we're going to just use some, you know those sprinkler covers that look like rocks from Home Depot, we're going to use those for the beach. So we bring out a couple of sprinkler covers that are rocks, and that's the beach, you know. And so make it simple. Another way to do this that a group that is close to where I live does is they have a small stage that they use, and they have one rod that goes across, and on that rod hangs different muslin backgrounds, and they just in between the sets they'll flip one muslin over the other, and they're simple. They're not like extravagantly painted backdrops. You know, it might just be a gate done in black, you know, a simple gate painted in black paint on a muslin. Or, you know, it might be an arch with a few beautiful vines or something simple, and it just denotes where they are. It might be something that, you know, portrays a castle or a library or, and so that's another way of doing it. And our Shakespeare mentors did something really awesome last year where they put one side of the stage was like a cafe and one side of the stage was a park. And so they put a background for a park on one side and the cafe on the other side, and they blocked it. So they knew they were going to do it, so they never had to change the stage. They just blocked the scenes where they were supposed to be. We had a pretty big stage, so we were able to do that. So all I would say is keep it simple. Make sure it doesn't detract, and make sure you don't have long scene changes that are going to involve money, time, and a lot of distraction from the play. Do you have anything else on that, Sherry?
No, I think you've really covered it. I think that's great. Simple. when you start getting complex and people start coming up with ideas for all this stuff, just, you know, remember the costumes are important. The stage is simple. Put your time and energy into the costumes, defining the characters. That'll be the most fun anyway. And really, in the long run, less work for you. I mean, costumes can be a lot of work, don't get me wrong, but I mean, you don't need to have a lot of time and energy going into both those things. Okay, props. Props are anything that the actors are not wearing, and like most, and are not pieces of scenery like flats or curtains or things like that. So like the rocks and the trees and the silverware and the chairs and the tables, all those things are props. You want to make sure that you, as you're going through, this is one of the things that as a director, sometimes I like the producer or the stage manager to start coming up with, depending on how involved they are, with the prop list, just as you're reading through the basic things that the script will call for, and then you can decide whether or not you actually need them. As you're going through your rehearsals and you realize you have to have one person who's always writing down the props. If it's yourself, if you have a student director, if the producer is always there, you can tell them, write this down on the prop list, you know. And then whoever the prop person is, you want to try to have most of the ideas about the props that you need, you know, early in your rehearsal period. Of course, you're going to go through a scene and realize, oh, you know, we need a rope for this scene, or we need a this or a that. And so you can add those things, but you don't want to be adding, you know, 25 things the week before your tech week. So have a prop list. The person who is in charge of props is going to, you know, be responsible for finding and making the difficult ones. And, you know, we always just send it out on our loop and say, here are the things we're looking for. Who has these things? The other thing that the prop, this is really more of something that who's ever collecting the list, the main list of the props, when you write them down, you want to try to figure out what side of the stage they're going to enter on, because you're going to have a prop table on stage right and on stage left. And so you want to know, does that prop need to start stage left or stage right? So then you will have your list of where all the props go. Now, sometimes you find once you get into tech week, you have it on stage right, and really the actor needs to grab it when they go off stage left because they're entering through the audience. So little things like that will change, but you want to have a, once again, just like when you're going to rehearsal, you want to have a master plan. If you have a master plan, it's easy to tweak it. You don't want to try to figure this out on tech week, so the, you know, because that's, if you don't have that figured out ahead of time, then that's one more thing that's going to eat up your time, and you really want to have your time where the actors and the stage crew is able to work on stage. There are a couple of things that are along with a prop list that make it very easy if you haven't seen this done before, is that when you get your two tables, you cover your prop tables with butcher paper and you put all the props out, and then we always draw, you know, you can either outline them, people do it different ways, outline them or just make little rectangles or whatever, and you label what prop is there, you know, mallet, Malvolio's coin purse, Sir Toby's hat. You know, sometimes a hat needs to be backstage or something. You know, Olivia's cape, all those kinds of things. You know, if they're bags, like traveling bags, they're being stowed under the table. You can write by the table, you know, traveling bags with an arrow and it's down below. This helps. There are two reasons this is very helpful. One, it helps you as you're doing your checklist to make sure you have all your props. And the other thing is the actors always know where to find their props. They're always in the same place, and it's easy for them to just go to that place and pick it up and go. So that's a really important thing to do when you go into Tech Week. Anything else on that, Angela?
Yeah, I have two really quick things. Number one, nobody touches the prop except the person who's supposed to have it. Don't let them play with props or because they always want to, but if you let them touch it, you let them play with it, then it won't be there when it's time to use.
It'll get broken. You have to be, you know, somebody has to be the prop Nazi. And
yeah,
I know that my kids all know they're not, you know, that they're not supposed to touch the props. And you have to say this more than once. And this is one of those things that sometimes with some kids you might have to just get a little stricter. You know, you might have to look at them and say, don't touch the props, I'm not even kidding. You know, or you get a little tough about it. And I even had one kid who was playing with these musical instruments. And I said, you can't touch the props. And he goes, well, they belong to my uncle. I said, I don't care who they belong. I don't care if they belong to your mother. You're not touching them because they're not yours in this play. So don't touch the props, you know. Don't put up with it. Go ahead.
The other thing I think that's really important is as you're going through the play, the director will want the props as soon as she can get them or he can get them, because if the actor has the prop, they can practice with the prop, and it's more believable. They can get more into character. They can get more into what's going on. So it's very important to have the props, especially certain props, as soon as you can.
Even if you have a rehearsal prop, which means it's not the actual thing, but it's something that they can practice with.
Yes, exactly. So that's all I have.
Okay, that's really important. Okay, Angela, lights and sound.
Lights and spotlight. I think it's important to go to the place that you're going to have the play beforehand to see what you have for lights and spotlights. So you know what you're going to be working with when you block the play, really. If you have a spotlight, awesome. Make sure you have one person in charge of the spotlight. It's the same as the props. Nobody touches the spotlight except for that one person. And the lights and spotlight need a script, and they're usually directed by the director. They're under the stage manager, but they're directed by the director. They have their script, and they write their cues down in their script just like a actor, just like a stage crew person, because their cues are very important. And so the whole week of Tech Week, you have them practice with the lights and spotlights. That is what Tech Week is for, so that those things become perfect. You have had all this time with the actors, and, of course, we're still, you know, tweaking and fine-tuning their stuff. But the lights and spotlight and those other backstage things, this is the time to make those perfect. The lights, you'll have whoever's doing the lights, them have a script. You can have adults do this. If you're worried about the spotlight because it's very expensive or whatever, you can ask an adult. You can ask kids, just like the crew. You can ask kids to do this, kids you trust, you know, kids that you
responsible.
They have to be really responsible, but it does let them have a little bit of an in towards being part of the group. I mean, you get really bonded in a play, and you're inviting people into that group. I don't think I have anything else for lights and spotlight, do you?
Yeah, we have had kids sometimes who, for whatever reason, they couldn't be in the play because their lives got too crazy, but they could come to all of Tech Week and participate in the play that way. So sometimes if people have to drop out of the play, and they promise that they will be at all the tech rehearsals and all of the performances and stuff, then that is a way for them to participate. So that's something else to keep in mind too. As long as they're responsible and you know you can count on them. So
that's what we're using this year for ours is kids that couldn't finish up the class but really wanted to be part of the play.
Right.
The people who are lights and spotlight, they read the play through every day. You know, they read it. The first year when I did lights as a parent, I I read that because I'm going through the script and looking for my cues, and so I really knew that play. It was a great experience for me. So you're giving somebody an opportunity there. It's not just asking a favor.
Also, when you're making your scripts, and I'm not sure if we mentioned this before, but you want to make sure that you, when you copy your scripts, you want to have one for everybody. You want to have maybe one or two extra in case someone loses theirs. We always charge for the second script. You know, one for the producer. Then you want to have one for the stage manager, one for the assistant stage manager, one for the sound person, one for the light person. And if there's a spot operator, you need one for the spot operator. And it depends on how the prop person is participating. If they're really just finding the props, then they might not need a script, but you might want one for the prop person. So that's like six extra scripts that you need outside of the producer and the director and all of the actors. So, all right. Now, I don't think we told you at the beginning, but we are going to go until 8:30, and so, Angela, that means we have about 20 minutes, so we got a book here on these last few things. Okay, sound design and music. Sometimes directors do their own music, or sometimes the producer will take it on. Sometimes, generally not in Shakespeare, sometimes you'll have an older kid who's been in your Commonwealth or co-op, and they really love music. And they like doing this kind of thing, so you might want to ask them, or there might, or there's a parent who wants to get it together. As the director, if you, the more you can give away, the more, because as a director and the producer, you guys are going to have a lot of things to handle. You may have to take one of these things on. However, you want to just figure out what, you know, when you're thinking about what are you trying to portray, you know, in the play, and whatever your time period is that you've chosen and everything else, you want to make sure that your music is congruent with your vision and your time period in some way. And then you want to have a little bit of scene change music. It just kind of makes it move along better, and then there occasionally is music in the play, so you have to deal with some of those songs if you're going to leave them in, and some of them are really important, and so you have to leave them in, but you just have to kind of find a way around the music. And if you have students who have to sing, or, you know, that's something that you really want to look into ahead of time and make sure that you know what you're going to do for those songs. Sometimes we, like when we've done As You Like It Western style, we've had the kids, one year we had the kids write their own music, which was kind of fun, but they were really into that and they wanted to do that. Another time they picked Western songs, you know, that were everybody knew. And so you don't have to stick with just the songs and the words that are in Shakespeare. So I think that is kind of self-explanatory. And Angela, do you have anything to add about that?
Just that it's a great opportunity to use talent that the kids have. It's a really good time.
Yeah, it really is. Okay, costumes. This is a biggie.
Costumes. It was Shakespeare. The sets are simple, but the costumes are elaborate. And the reason is because we want the characters to really come out. When you put on a costume, it's like Jack Nicholas when he played the Joker. He said, you know, you got to work the suit. You know, it's really, once you put a costume on, it really helps you get into character. And we usually have the girls wear dresses to rehearsal, and if we have somebody who's playing two different parts, we give them a piece of a costume to wear to rehearsal so that as they change into the other character, they have something to denote who they are. It helps you get into character. So the costumes, you need to start working on them right away. The director sits down with the costume person and the producer, and they go through the director's vision for things. This can vary widely. The director can sometimes have a really specific what they want, and sometimes they have, you know, some general ideas. But the costume director at that point takes that and turns it into what's called a costume plot, where they have a list of the characters, and they write exactly what each person needs. So, like, Antonio might need black shoes, white stockings, a pair of brown slops, and, you know, I mean, exactly, they need a, their doublet needs to have a high collar or whatever. So they write down exactly what each character needs, and then they will decide what each person is going to bring. Maybe everybody brings their own stockings and shoes, and then as a team you work together on the costumes. One thing that's really good to know is who in your group is a very good shopper and who in your group is a very good seamstress. And so then you divide up the work and you say, okay, shoppers, we're looking for 6 pairs of leather pants. That's what I had last year, 6 pairs of leather pants. And you know what? I have some really great shoppers in my group. They were able to come up with that in like 2 weeks. And so you get the costume plot. You give it to the parents at the parent meeting. The parents take the costumes, the costume plot, and they say, okay, I'm willing to shop. These are the things that are on the shopping list. And I'm on a conference call right now. I'm sorry. I didn't think anybody would be up at my house at this time of day. But so you give that to the parents. The parents either shop or they sew. They know what they have to bring for their person. They might know I need to make one smock and a 2 pairs of slops or whatever. And they... I need 5 50s scarves, you know, for these beautiful girls. Or I need, you know, so the director has the vision. The costume person makes the costume plot and follows up to make sure. You have to have a date when the costumes are due. As soon as you have the costumes done, you have them turn it in. When you get the costumes, you don't give them to anybody to take home. Period, unless they need like alterations or something, but otherwise you keep them because you don't want them not to come back. You don't want them to get lost or forgotten. So if you have them during tech week, you have to have one person take them home and wash them if they're sweaty or whatever, but you don't let them take them home again, ever. Barry, do you have anything on the costumes? Oh, you know what? Can I just say one more thing? The costumes, It's important to try to do as good a quality as you can. There's going to be budget limitations, and there's going to be limitations on your time. But do the best you can to make them quality, because it's going to make a difference in your – it's going to make the big – as far as the outside of the acting, this is going to make the biggest difference in your play. And it's also going to show the kids that you're legit. You know, you are a legitimate, awesome, valid group of Shakespeare players. It shows them that you're serious about what you're doing. And it's one of the Thomas Jefferson, you know, 7 important things, quality, not quantity. So you want them to be quality, and you want the kids to feel the quality of the costumes. And one more thing, you don't want to put this all on one person. You do not want to have one person in charge of sewing everything, because they'll be angry with you and they'll quit.
Yes, they will.
And if they don't, you'll wish they did. It's just not a good thing. And it's not nice.
And if this is your first year and your group is not used to this, don't pick a time period that's really involved. Do something that's going to be easy to get out of thrift shops, you know? Burning out everybody and freaking them out. Once they see the possibility and everything else, they're willing to work and do more. But know your group. Know your limitations and know your strengths and know what you can really do. And as a director, as you get closer to Tech Week, you just have to be able to let go of some things that you had envisioned and figure out what is really important. What do we have to have, and what is just kind of, well, that would be really nice, but really we can do without if it's going to make things so crazy and hard or it's too expensive or, you know, whatever. So, all right. Publicity. Publicity is really up to you. You know, email loops, some people put things in the paper. You can make up flyers and put them around town, whatever you want to do to publicize your production. I think it's good to have somebody design something that can be emailed out or handed out or something so that people have things to give to their friends, you know, with dates and times and, you know, fun things. And again, this is not an area I would spend a lot of money in, but certainly with, you know, email and everything else, it's pretty easy to send things out so that people can get the information. And it's important to have somebody who's starting to do that about, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time so that people can let their friends know what's coming up. And sometimes this is another way that you can bring kids in, depending on what big a role, you know, what big roles they have or whatever. Sometimes the kids want to design the program covers or the, you know, the and the little posters or the flyers that you're going to send out. Sometimes another thing that we have the publicity people do is we'll have them also, like whatever the cover of our program is and our flyers, we'll also make a cover. You know, we've done it in all different ways, but sometimes we'll have like a half a piece of cardstock with that on it with all the dates and everything else. And the back of that is where the mentors will write, you know, little notes to them to hand out at the cast party for all the students or the last night of the show or the first night of the show or whenever you want to do that. So that's something that the publicity person can do as well. Anything else, Angela, or do you want to go on to tickets?
Let's go on. I can't think of anything else. Tickets, you can sell tickets. If you have a place, you know, you could sell tickets to pay for your all the expenses, the costumes and stuff. Sometimes you just have them, you include the price on the flyer that you send out, you know, in your publicity, and then you have everybody pay at the door. And then, you know, if you can put out the money ahead of time. Our first year, we had everybody buy their own costume, and then they got to keep it, and that's how we funded it. And then we sold tickets, and that those tickets just went into our budget for the theater. It's you can have the kids sell tickets ahead of time. You can do that, and that way you have a little bit of money ahead of time to work on to put forward towards your deposit or your costumes or whatever.
Angela, are you there? I think we lost her for a minute, so I'm just going to go on. We don't usually print tickets in our group. We just sell at the door, so you don't necessarily have to print tickets. It all depends on how you want to do it. If you're trying to do a fundraiser, you know, perhaps you do want to print up tickets for them to hand out. You know, if you have the actors sell the tickets, in some groups do that as well. That's really up to you and how you want to arrange that. Okay, programs and acknowledgments for the actors. Sometimes we put programs and publicity together, or sometimes we've had, you know, programs, publicity, and tickets is kind of all one area, or you can divide it up. It just depends on how many families you have and things like that. But the programs just acknowledge everybody and you know, just list everyone who's participated. Thank people who have done things, you know, or lent you things that are big and major. We usually acknowledge the the place where we meet weekly for our Commonwealth School, and we also acknowledge the place where we're doing our play, because actually they give us really good deals in terms of, you know, rent and things like that, and we realize that, so we always want to acknowledge them. And we see, you know, some of the people that we deal with all the time, we invite them to come to our shows and just, you know, let them come. But it's just a place to acknowledge people for the work that they've done that year in Shakespeare.
You know what? Oh.
You're back.
Yeah, I am. Sorry. I don't even know what happened. You know how that goes.
Okay.
One thing that Sherry's group has always done, and we adopted this because we thought it was awesome, is that in the acknowledgments, we always acknowledge all the husbands or wives of the people who were not able to be home very much the previous weeks. All the all the husbands or wives of, you know, the director, the producer, and the stage manager, all those people, the mentors, husbands or wives, so that they, because they do sacrifice their, you know, some things in their family so that you can have a crazy
dinner,
catchy.
Laundry.
Yes, clean house, all that
clean
stuff.
House.
Yeah, so that's
yeah.
a good, those are, or if like Home Depot lets you borrow 5 rocks for your seacoast, you know, and acknowledge them. If anybody gives you costumes or props, sets, acknowledge them as well.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, cast party.
Okay, cast party. This is something that it's nice to be able to ask somebody to do who doesn't have, who isn't able to come to, you know, they're not able to put in a lot of time in somewhere else, and maybe they feel, you know, like they really want to help, but they just don't know how they can because they work too much or they have little kids at home or whatever. This is a good one for them. We have done it different ways where we've had everybody bring, you know, $10 and we meet at the pizza place. And that's the easiest way to go. It's it can be fun. It can be that it's too expensive, you know, for people to do. It depends on how you want it. We often have our cast party come out of our budget now that we have a little bit of a budget. And we usually do something easy. We don't have a lot of people cook. The director and the producer never bring anything. You know, or the stage manager, whoever comes during tech week, they don't cook. Nobody cooks unless it's opening the bag of salad, you know. So pizza is great. Ordering, you know, Subway, you know, $5 footlongs or whatever you can do to make it simple, fun. And you really all you need for a cast party is a place to have it, food, and time. And it's really, it's just a celebration of this big project that you've done. We like to take the time to acknowledge our students at the cast party, and usually we have something for them, like Sherry said, either a note card or I know Sherry sometimes hands out gum because they're not allowed to chew gum at the practices. And we've, like when we did 50s, everybody had a pair of sunglasses that were 50 sunglasses for a dance number we had. And we gave everybody their sunglasses and a note telling them what, you know, what we really appreciated about them. But that's the cast party. It just should be a celebration, and all you really need is food and time and somebody to stand up and say, thank you, everybody. We love you. We had a great year this year.
Great. All right. I know we're only supposed to have 3 minutes, but we have more than 3 minutes of time. If you guys need to go, then go ahead. But I hate to tell you, this is some of the important stuff, too. You can always, we are recording it, so you can listen to the recording if you have to leave. Before Tech Week happens, it's really important for the director, the producer. It's not that important for the producer to be there. She can or, you know, she could be there. She doesn't necessarily have to be. But you need the director, the stage manager, at least the stage manager. If you have the assistant stage manager, that's great. Lights, sound, all the people for those different things. And what you do is you have you have a meeting where you go through the entire play from top to bottom and you give all the cues. Now, this will take you a couple of hours, and it seems like a lot of time, especially during a time when you don't have time. But I'm telling you to schedule this meeting now. If you have students who are, I mean, sometimes the lights and the sound people can come or they can't come. That's not, I mean, it's good to have them there. You really have to have the director and the stage manager there for sure. And try to have the other people there just because you're all able to go through the whole show, write down all the cues. The people who are running those different departments get more familiar with the show. You guys have a chance to kind of meet, become a team. You're the tech team, the heads of the different areas, and it creates a bond between all of you. And you go through and you go, okay, the beginning of the show, we're going to, okay, the first thing is we're going to have this music. There's going to be this huge music. Oh, and then, okay, and sometimes cues are, you have to listen for something or you see something happen on stage or, you know, when the lights come on, I want the music to come on or whatever. So for your opening, you'll say, okay, this is the music we're going to use. And, well, actually, at this meeting, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. At this meeting, you're just going to say, okay, first we're going to have the music, then we're going to have the lights come on, then the actors are going to come on, you know. And before you even do that, you say, okay, the stage is going to be set this way. There's going to be a rock in the middle of the stage, and that's all, just a rock in the middle of the stage. And you want to, you know, and then you're going to say, okay, we're going to start the music, audience lights out, and then eventually, you know, when we're there, I'll tell you when to bring the lights up, and then it starts, and then when the actors start talking, that's when I want you to fade the music out. Or you wait until everybody gets on stage and then you fade the music out, whatever it is. So you go through and then you go to the next one. Okay, we have a scene change. So and you know who your set crew is. And so you're gonna give everyone a responsibility. Okay, so John's gonna come out. He's going to bring out a chair. He's going to put down the chair where it goes. He's going to take the rock and take it off. Meanwhile, on the other side of the stage, Sue is going to bring out another table, and so is Peter. And then John and Fred are going to bring out the table. So you go through and you methodically figure out what has to go off the stage and what has to go on the stage, and you assign everything. Scene changes are like dances, and they're choreographed, and you want it to be as effortless as possible so the audience isn't really paying attention and there aren't long pauses. Sometimes that happens. You want to try to be as efficient as possible. You don't want to go on and off the stage without anything if it's possible. So you always want to bring something out and take something off. For your scene changes, you can, of course, use some of the actors and actresses. I try not to give the leads any more of that stuff than I have to, just because they have so much that they're thinking about. Of course, they can grab small things when they go off the stage. They can even help carry something off if they don't have to run somewhere else and be on stage in the next scene. But anyway, that's pretty much that. It's a really important meeting, and trust me when I say that if you have this meeting, your tech week is going to flow a lot faster, because you're not, just like when you're going to rehearsal, you want to have all your blocking down so you're not wasting time. You don't want to try to figure out what you're doing, because it does take some time to figure it out. It really makes a huge difference to do this. So for tech week, you're rehearsing every day. At least that's what we recommend you do. Your rehearsals probably need to be at least 4 hours long. And what we and this is where the director and the producer are really beneficial to each other. This wars can start during tech week because people are tired, they're stressed, they're anxious, You have to have compassion and love for each other. And don't let things get out of hand. Make sure that you are communicating and things are going along. Sometimes in the midst of a rehearsal, you have to agree to disagree and figure things out later so that you can go on. But both the producer and the director have to have compassion for each other and learn to listen. You have to realize when the other person is stressed and just give them a break. And don't get your feelings hurt. Don't take things personally. Just realize in the great cosmic scheme of things, this is a little thing that happened, and try and figure it out. It's really a time for leadership. You want to really love everyone, especially those who are being the most difficult, because something's going on for them. That's all that happens. So just know that Tech Week is always crazy. And, you know, but the more organized you are, the more things will be in order and moving along. And you'll be able to deal with the little personality things that come up and things that go along. Okay, Angela, what are the things that the producer has to really be aware of during Tech Week?
Okay, the producer, during Tech Week, all of the details that you missed come out, like, you know, this isn't going to happen because that we just could not find a pillar or whatever, or, we missed that we're going to have, you know, fresh home, we're going to need fresh bread on this or fresh fruit or whatever. The producer, they are still taking notes from the director on the stuff that just needs to happen. They make the details happen that haven't happened, that are the last minute details. They're taking the notes from the director and following up. They are making sure that all the backstage people are there. That if you have, during Tech Week, you're going to have everybody in the green rooms. You're going to have your, you're going to use whatever devices you're going to use so that they can hear what's going on stage. A lot of people use baby monitors because everybody has them and they're so easy and cheap. But if you have headsets because you have somebody special in your group that has headsets or whatever you have, or maybe you have somebody giving cues from, you know, but you have everybody in the green rooms, and it's good to have a parent in the green rooms with the kids. You make sure everybody knows the tech schedule, so you send that out ahead of time. You make sure that they're going to be there. You ask them to be there early so that they can wear their costumes and get their makeup and hair done. You know, the director will know when she wants makeup and hair. You probably want full costumes all during Tech Week. And the producer makes sure everybody knows that. They talk to the costume director. They make sure everybody's going to bring their costume. You know, that way you can see who doesn't have what. And you can see
you wanna have
where
costumes,
you really stand.
But you don't want to wait till Tech Week. You really want to have the costumes due a week before you go into Tech Week.
Yeah.
And not that the kids are wearing them during that last week of rehearsal, but you want to have them due so that people are bringing them in, and then you can start working on the details.
And one of the reasons you have that is because they won't have them done. Some people, there will be, a lot of people will have all their costumes done, but you want them to turn them in so you can see what's missing. And on Tech Week, you want everybody to wear their costumes. And like I said, you probably need to get somebody who's willing to take home all the shirts and wash them or whatever, the stockings, all the stuff that needs to really be washed. You make sure everything is set up with the theater, that somebody's going to open the theater on time. You get there early. You make sure that the props, you have kids to drag the props in from the car, the costumes in from the car. And so when it's time to start rehearsal, everybody's, you know, the props are laid out, the actors are dressed. That's all the producer. They're running around kind of like crazy beforehand, just making sure things happen. We make sure that the kids have snacks because it makes it go really well. We don't let anything like creamy or anything that's going to hurt the costumes, but we the producer has parents sign up to bring snacks. Usually that includes water so that it doesn't hurt their costume, and maybe fresh fruit, maybe crackers and cheese, stuff that is snacky,
vegetables.
You know, scorp, you know, the, you know, like trail mix type stuff, stuff like that that they can snack on, that they can eat, that
no
they
chocolate.
Can keep their energy up. No chocolate, yeah. Nothing that's going to hurt their costumes. And that is, I think, mainly the producer makes sure all the detail, all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted. They make sure all those details happen. And they're continually taking notes on what needs to be done. They're making calls to see why, you know, Olivia did not show up on time, and is everything okay, and when is she going to be here, and is she going to have her hair done? You know, all those phone calls the producer is making.
Great. The director, meanwhile, is bringing everything together along with the producer, and especially on the actor side. So you're having your tech meeting that I talked about earlier with the stage manager and sound and lights, and you're just trying to think about what are the things I haven't thought about and how am I going to do this and how can I inspire the kids. And really what you want to do is have your attention on the kids. Are there actors I need to talk about? Sometimes, especially with my leads, because I don't have as much time at rehearsal, I'll call them and talk to them about different scenes. Or, you know, say, I want to call and talk to you about some of your notes because there's some things that I want to discuss with you about, you know, what you're doing. And you always want to make sure you're encouraging the kids and telling them what a good job they're doing, even if you feel like they could do better. If you acknowledge them, you have somewhere to go with them. So that's really important for actors. It's hard to do this. If you haven't done this, you know, if you guys know how hard it was when you had to be on stage. So imagine that's how the kids are. Whenever you see someone acting up or they're not doing very well, just remember how you felt when you had to go do your scene at training. And you can let them know. You remind them that you had to do a scene, and you weren't even told that you were going to do a scene before you went. And so, you know, and how much time you had. You share all those feelings and things with them because it can be very powerful. So your schedule for the week, Monday, you're going to tech Act 1 through 2 or 3. Tuesday, you're going to tech Act 3 through 5. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. So one of the things I always tell the actors at the end of rehearsal, the last day of rehearsal after the run-through, is that we're going into tech week. The first 2 days are going to be more for the technicians. You guys have had 6 weeks to rehearse. They get 2 days. So you guys have to be there. You have to be in costume. You have to be ready to work and ready to go. We try to run as much of the show, as much of those first 2 to 3 acts that we can. And so a tech rehearsal is where everyone has their cues, but you have to figure out exactly when they're going to happen. And sometimes you figure them out and you realize, oh, that's too soon or that's too early or, you know, this scene change doesn't really work. Okay, let's go back and start again. So this is where, don't try and give notes and fix the scene change later. Fix it in the moment. So, you know, you have your stage set up. You know what you're doing. And then you run the opening of the show. And so you'll say, okay, as a director, you've listened to the music. You know exactly when you want the lights to come up and when you want the sound to be turned off and when you want the actors to start moving. So you tell everyone. You get everyone who's involved in that, and you say, okay, here's how this is going to go. Okay, I want to just hear the music. Okay, lights. Do you hear where the drums start going boom, 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 boom? Okay, that's when I want you to start slowly bringing the lights up. Okay, actors, do you hear that little, when the flutes start playing and they go really high? That's when I want you to start entering the stage and you start your lines. Okay, sound, when you see the actors and they start talking, I want you to slowly take out the sound. So that's what you do. Then you run that. You see how it goes. Well, you may find you told the actors to enter too early. So then you find another place where you really want them to enter. You fix it then, and then you run it again and see if it works. Okay, that's great. Let's do that one more time. Everybody change that. You make sure everybody has pencils. Write that down. Make those changes. Make the changes. Tell me when you're ready to go. And you have every, so you make sure that everyone's writing everything down in their script. And then you go, and then you run the scene, and then you go to the next scene change. And so the actors go off the stage, okay, at the end of the scene, okay, stop. Now, stage manager, tell everybody what they're doing. Now, hopefully they've been backstage kind of prepping people a little. I try to get the people who are running tech to be there early so the stage manager can go over, you know, some of the scene changes. And I always tell the kids who are on stage crew, you have to stay backstage. You do not go get to go backstage and hang out. You have to stay back there. And then you talk through the next scene change. What's going to happen? Who's going to do what? And you let the stage manager take over. Okay, you know, Julie, can you tell us what's happening? Who's got what responsibility? And then the stage manager will tell everybody exactly what they're doing. And then you go to the end of the scene, and the director will tell the lights and the sound people when they want lights and sound to go off and on, and then you run the scene change. And if it doesn't go well, you say, okay, stop, let's go back. Do we need to fix anything? Okay, let's try that again. You do it so that the technicians get what they're doing. This is their this is more their rehearsal than the actor rehearsal. And that's how you run those 2 days until you get to the end of the show. And you may not decide to do the bows on the second day. You may decide to do the bows on the third day. And then Wednesday and Thursday, you run the whole show without stopping. You don't stop for anything. I mean, sometimes there's a major thing that goes wrong and you have to, but you really want to just keep going because you want the kids to have a sense of, because stuff like that can happen in the middle of the show. You just want things to go. Okay, my last few things are, I'm a stickler about this, and it's probably because I spent so much time in professional theater, but there are a lot of reasons for this. I do not let my actors and actresses mingle with audience members before during intermission, before the show or during intermission. They get to see their friends and family after the show. The only people who are backstage are people who have a purpose. I don't let friends come to rehearsals. I don't let friends come to the beginning of, you know, when everyone's getting into their makeup and costumes and just hanging out unless they have a purpose. If they're helping with makeup and hair or they have some purpose, then they can be there. But I just don't let that happen because it gets the kids out of character and it breaks the illusion between the audience and the actors. The kids start getting so familiar with the audience that there's not that tension anymore between them. They start worrying more about their friends and less about their character and their characterization. And really, you want them to be focused on the show. There's a time and place for everything. You don't have to be with your friends and your family all the time, and this is not a time for them to be there. I don't care if they're in the Commonwealth. They don't get to come backstage unless they have a purpose. They just don't. And that's how life is. So and you guys can do it however you want, but I really think that's an important thing for kids to learn. I think in this day and age, people think that everything is okay all the time, and it's not. It just isn't. There's a time and a place for certain things. And this is really a time for you guys who have been working on this production so much to come together and be together and make something really special happen. Have faith that it will all work out. There will be days when you'll think, why did I invite anyone to this? And I can't believe we're actually asking people to pay to come to this. Trust me, you will have those feelings. For years, I didn't even invite people because I was so, I didn't want to this because my goodness. But the kids will pull it out. Don't worry. And you know what? If they don't, then that's something they have to learn to live with too. Remember, this is a simulation. It is a simulation just like they do in Key of Liberty, in TJYC, and any of the other scholar projects that we have. We just do it in public, and we charge people to see it. So it's a learning experience for everyone. And if you have done the things that you need to do, it will work out. They will come through for you. Just remember yourself, we're building statesmen and stateswomen. We're not trying to have an Oscar-winning, it's not an Oscar, a Grammy, a Tony. That's what we're going for.
Tony.
We're not going for that. We're not going for a Tony Award winner. And I think when you try to build statesmen and stateswomen is when you do end up with a Tony Award winner. So I know that this sounds like a lot of work, but I promise that if you follow the plan, things will all work out. I know we're really over. I'm very sorry. But I do want to give you a chance to ask some questions.
Can I say something really quick, Sherry?
Yes, go ahead.
I think one thing that makes a huge difference is to say thank you to everybody as often as you can. Tell everybody when they do a good job. It goes really smooth. And I've seen people do a really great job with these and a really horrible job. And since I'm not like Sherry and didn't work in professional theater, I actually figured out the secret the first year I did it was to listen to my mentors, because I was so worried about it. I listened to my mentors and followed all the stuff they said, regardless of if they sounded like they knew what was going on or not. And you know what? They saved me from some huge mistakes, and they taught me so much. So I'd say those two things will make a big difference in the end of your play. So we're opening up for questions, right?
Anybody have any questions?
I do.
Okay. Is this Laura?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, does the producer have to be to all the rehearsals?
That's between the director and the producer. I think that it's helpful for the director to help kind of maintain, depending on how many kids are going to be at the rehearsal. If you've got everybody at the rehearsal, I'd say you have to have the producer, because you don't want the director to have to be in charge of that many kids, especially when she's not working with all of them on stage all the time.
We've had it where we've had a producer that had to be gone on certain days, and we had a parent come in.
Yeah.
But that, if that's the case, you do want to have your producer and your director sync up at some point, so they have a conference call later on in the day or the next day, just to for all the details that the producer needs that they figured out during the rehearsal.
Yeah. I mean, okay. If you've got a rehearsal and you're only going to have three or four actors there, you may not need another person there besides the director. But other than that, I would say definitely have someone else there.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Anybody else? Any other questions?
I have one. What is the green room?
The green room.
Okay. That's a good question.
Is this Julie?
This is Cher.
Oh, Cher. Okay. The green room is not necessarily something that you need. A green room is where the actors can wait. They're in costume and they're waiting to go on stage. And it's where there's a funny story about how it got its name, but I can't remember what it is right now. Anyway, it's where, you know, people can just wait to go on stage. But you don't necessarily need a green room. I mean, they can wait out in the hall. They can wait in the dressing rooms.
They need a place to wait, somewhere to wait.
They do need a place to wait. It's true. That's where they're not going to be making a lot of noise.
And wherever that is, we call it the green room.
Yes.
It's just where the actors are when they're not on stage, because they're not going to be in the wings. You can't let them just sit and watch the other. That's too hard. It makes a lot of noise, and people can see them from the audience.
And during scene changes, they're in the way. So that's something you have to be strict about. The kids get to watch the play. the first 2 days when you're going through the tech rehearsal. After that, everybody's backstage. I don't let anybody in the audience during Wednesday and Thursday of rehearsal.
If they really want to see it, have somebody video it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Great. Any other questions? Well, thank you so much for being on the call. If you have any questions, please call us or email us. If it's an immediate question, go ahead and give us a call. Let me give you my cell phone number right now so you have it somewhere in your notes. It's 858-735-8058. And please don't hesitate to call me. And then, and Angela, would you prefer, I mean, you can email me as well, but sometimes you have a question that you need immediate response on.
Are you trying to not ask me, but ask me if I mind giving my phone number out?
You want to give out your cell phone number?
Okay, I don't mind doing that.
You don't have
my
to.
My cell phone, that's fine. My phone number is 760-807-9679, and I don't always answer my phone because I do work outside the house sometimes. But if you leave a message, I'll get back to you that day. And I don't mind, you know, like I said, that was my, if I would say what is the thing that has helped me the most be able to, you know, what has helped me be successful in being a Shakespeare mentor the most, it is relying on my mentors and following what they say. So I don't mind people calling because there are times when you just don't have any idea. I mean, with me, because I was not a drama person, you don't have any idea where to go next or what to do about a situation. So I don't mind people calling either.
Wonderful. Okay, if nobody has any questions, then we will end the call. Thanks so much for being on with us today. And,
yeah, thank you, guys.
Everybody break a leg.
Yeah, good luck with your shows. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, one thing I want to tell you. Don't feel, when you go into rehearsal, don't feel obligated to send a mentor report every week. But do, when you're done with your show, do send in a final mentor report about how everything went for you. Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.